Normally, I like to get right into the lesson in our worship services, but this morning I need to take a moment for two or three things. I want to introduce to you some new members who've placed membership this week. The early service this morning, we introduced Catherine Mashburn, who's the sister of Carolyn Whaley. I'd like for the Lairds, Cliff and Susan, to stand up. I believe they're back here. They've been with us long enough that they assumed, I think we all assumed, that they were a part of us, but they are placing membership and worship with us. Of course, Susan's the daughter of the Scots. And then the Lions would just let Gary sit down so he can stand back up. Gary and Nelda, if you will, they have placed membership with us this week. I don't think, are Anita and Chad Weekly here this morning? They usually go to church on Sunday with John, who preaches at Liberty, but Anita and Chad have placed membership with us. They're here on Wednesday evenings and Sunday evenings part of the time. I enjoy visiting with the new members that come in, and we're thankful to have all these new members, and I hope to visit in their home, but I would like to delay my visit to Gary and Nelda Lyons for about 10 months. I want to wait till they move back to Hawaii and visit with them when they move back. So keep that in mind. I won't forget that, Gary, Nelda. We're thankful to have so many of you here, to have so many of our students with us, even though so many are gone today. I want to preach a little mini sermon for about a minute and a half. I want to thank the congregation and commend the congregation for its giving, especially during the last month. We averaged, I believe, about the most we've ever averaged in our regular giving, over $5,400 a week during the month of August. And I'd rather talk about giving when it's up than when it's down. And I want to tell you that I appreciate the way the congregation has responded at a time when we've been giving extra for the bellow work, and you'll see this figure come down again even today. And I want to tell you how much I appreciate the way that people sacrifice and reach out to give. Our work has grown during the year, and really we need more than the $5,000 a week to cover the different works that we've added, and the way the congregation's responded is to be commended. I think if all of us will continue to have the right attitude and search our giving in a personal way, and that's the way God wants it, and that's the way it should be, that we have the ability in this congregation to even continue to grow and go on up. And I just didn't want to take the time to preach a sermon on giving, but just take a moment to tell you how much I appreciate, and I've heard the elders make comments in the last few days along this line too, how much we all appreciate the support that you're giving to the work. We have some even larger projects in the future, and we're going to be able to do a lot more, and we're thankful for it. The lessons today are of the Paul Harvey type. Tonight you'll get the rest of the story. 1 Corinthians 13 is perhaps one of the most known and most loved chapters in the Bible, referred to as the love chapter many times. And yet I think the verse that we're discussing this morning and tonight may not be as familiar as some of the other verses in that chapter. I have reference to verse 11. Paul said, "When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." This morning, we're going to be discussing the part of that verse that emphasizes when I was a child. And this evening, the part when I became a man. I appreciate the songs that have been chosen this morning. Most of the songs that we've used are what we sometimes call children's songs. And yet they have very well set the stage for the discussion that we have in mind today. When I was a child, I spake as a child, understood as a child, and thought as a child. I'm convinced that in the main, Paul intended to draw a contrast in this verse between a child and a man. When I was a child, when I became a man, there are two basic ideas involved here. He draws this contrast basically by using three concepts. I spake, I understood, and I thought. These are the words that are used in the King James Version to translate the thoughts here. Other versions use other words here. One says, when I planned as a child, or when I was a child, I planned as a child. Another one says, I entertain childlike thoughts. And there are other ideas that are presented. It seems to me that there is a process involved in these three thoughts here that are intended to draw the contrast. And it may be a process that is presented in reverse order. I spake, I understood, and I thought. The word that's translated thought here gives the idea of there being some entertaining of thoughts, some calculations involved in the mind of an individual. The word understood carries with it the idea of reasoning and developing conclusions, developing emotions about the thoughts that are involved. And the word spake indicates that there's some action involved, that there is some outward expression of the understanding which has been developed through the process of thinking. As he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Proverbs 23:7. How reason ye in your hearts? Luke 5:22. To come to that understanding in the heart where one can be converted. Matthew 13:15. And the development of the faith, that understanding to the development of the faith, belief in God, Romans 10, verse 10, and other related passages. So in this verse, he is showing that there must be the thinking process that develops an understanding, which in turn develops and presents itself in outward action. And he says there's a difference in being a child and being a man. When I was a child, folks, we need to understand that a child is a child. Sometimes we may not understand that even as parents and as adults. I think it is a shame that many times we try to make our children be adults, and then sometimes as adults we try to go back and act like the children again. There's nothing wrong with the little girl dressing up like mother and wearing the high-heel shoe that sticks out about as far behind as it's up in the air on the heel, as long as that's done in the playful, pretending attitude. I think one of the most sickening things that I've ever seen is to see an adult, especially a woman, who wants to dress like a teenager, and sometimes even one that's younger, and act like that. There is a distinction, and we need to especially understand this morning that a child is a child. He speaks like a child, he understands like a child, and he thinks like a child. God's book says that. We don't have to have some man write a book to tell us this. God's book teaches us this. Now, understanding that a child is a child reinforces in our thinking the idea that a child is very impressionable. And we need to underscore that and take advantage of it. Remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth was the advice given in Ecclesiastes 12:1. Before the evil days come and the years come in which people will be discouraged, he says, during that time of youth is when there needs to be the right kind of remembrance of the creator. It is indicated to us in Ephesians 4:14 that a child may be carried about in an easy way by every wind of doctrine, by the cunning craftiness and the sleight of men. A child is very, very impressionable because a child is a child. And that says something that we need to understand, all of us need to understand, and that is that children are going to make mistakes. They're not perfect. Even our grandchildren are not. We sometimes think they are, but they're not. They're going to make some mistakes. That's a part of the process of growing up. And we need to understand that a child is a child. In the second place, we need to understand that the Bible teaches us that God does not expect a child to be nor to act like an adult in those earlier years. We talk about the age of accountability. I don't know exactly what that age is chronologically, and sometimes it's not easy to define it even in other terms. But discussing the age of accountability, folks, at least says one thing to us today, that we understand that God even recognizes that there is a period of time in those earlier years in the development of a child that child is not to be accountable in the same sense that an adult is. And so for that reason, we conclude that the Bible teaches that a child is in the safety of Jesus Christ until he comes to this point in life that we have referred to as the age of accountability. God does not expect that child to be accountable in the same way that an adult is. Therefore, this demands that there be some protection and there be some provisions made for each child. If a child is not to be accountable as an adult, somebody else is going to have to be accountable for him. This is involved in the home relationship with the parents, particularly, but there ought to be the interest on the part of all of us to all the boys and girls to help them to go through this process of growth and to mature and develop in the right way. I think it is a shame that young people many times look at the word authority as meaning only the boss idea, whereas in reality, authority carries with it the concept of protection and provisions that are to be made for those children. Parents are to lay up for the children. They're to take care of them, 2 Corinthians 12:14. Fathers are to be concerned about their children, provide for them, and protect them, indicated in verses like Ephesians 6 and verse 4. The fact that God does not expect a child to act like an adult means that we are to provide for them, and we are to protect them, and we are to care for them. We need to realize what God has said about offending a little one. If you want to know how much God thinks of the baby that you hold in your arms or the little boy or girl that's sitting by you on the pew, sometimes not doing exactly what you would like for them to do, if you want to know what God thinks of each one of them, just remember that He said it would be better for any of us to have a rope around his neck and a stone tied to it and drowned in the depth of the sea than to offend one of those little ones. God has placed an umbrella of protection, in a sense, over our children during those formative years. And we need to understand that even God does not expect a child to act like an adult in those years. That means, then, that a child should not try to be an adult without the proper process of growth, which takes time and effort. Sometimes more time and more effort with some than with others. That indicates that the younger boys and girls need to listen very closely to what God has to say to you. If God doesn't expect you to be an adult and He doesn't expect you to be accountable and to make all the decisions, then that means somebody else has that responsibility. And that God-given responsibility is especially to your dad and to your mother. That's why children are to obey their parents in the Lord, for this is right, Ephesians 6. 1 through 2. It's why children ought to honor their parents, as indicated in that same passage. It's why younger ones should develop and be taught respect for those that are older, not just their parents, but all adults and older people. Looking at the older women as mothers, the younger women as sisters, the older men as fathers, and the younger men as brothers, as Paul indicated to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5. It's why there is such a great need for young people to realize that they are to respect their parents, they are to obey them, they are to honor them, they are to have respect for others, and they are to listen to adults. Boys and girls, if somebody else has the responsibility of making decisions for you in your younger years and then helping you to make the right decisions as you grow older, you need to listen to the instruction of that father and mother, Proverbs 4:1, and obey them and honor them. We need to understand that a child is a child. Paul said, "When I was a child, I spake, understood, and thought as a child." That God doesn't expect a child to be an adult, and that a child should not try to act like an adult without the proper process of growth and development to that degree of maturity, to where he can fit into the other side of this contrast that Paul is drawing on this occasion. But you know, when we have said all of this, it really brings us to focus on something else that is extremely important. And that is, if a child is a child and is not responsible for making decisions in those earlier years of life, parents need to recognize the great responsibility that is placed on their shoulders and to have the right attitude toward rearing their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We've said it many times, but I don't apologize for saying it again. There's just not any possession that you have on this earth other than your soul that's more important than the son or daughter that has been entrusted to your care. Psalms 127 says, children are an heritage of the Lord. Fruit of the womb is His reward. And I thank God for every child, for every baby that's in our services and involved even as early as possible. I thank God that we hear a baby cry occasionally and know that there are the younger ones with us. And mothers, particularly, listen to me. Don't ever apologize for a child of yours crying. Deal with it and control it in the right way, and we'll touch on that in a moment also. Don't ever apologize for having your baby with you at church. Having your baby and your young son or daughter in Bible class, that's where they need to be because of the importance of these formative years. But parents do need to accept the responsibility that is placed on their shoulders. There is a tendency today to shirk that responsibility and to blame the church and the schools and the community if our children are not taught and brought up in the right way. Let me remind you, God has placed that first responsibility at the feet of dads and mothers. And we cannot deny that. We must not overlook it. And we must accept that responsibility. Parents are involved in bringing the child to where he can be as a man, to where he can be more mature. In the area of provisions that we mentioned a moment ago, this is necessary. We certainly would be concerned if a father was not interested in feeding his family, clothing his family, and providing for their physical needs. It is important for dad and mother to be involved in making those decisions that need to be made and beginning to help that son or daughter to learn to make decisions. That's the process of training. And that is laid on the shoulders of the parents by our Heavenly Father. We need to teach our children with love, teaching them to where they not only can understand the milk of the gospel, but grow to understand the meat of the gospel. Hebrews 5, 12 through 14. And those verses say that this is by reason of time and reason of use. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some effort. It's going to take the use and the experience involved in rearing our children in the right way. I'm sure there are times that all parents become somewhat discouraged. And yet when we look at the end product of bringing our boys and girls up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, it's worth it all. When we teach them and we train them. Children ought to be taught to behave. They're going to be children. And we need to be careful that we don't try to put them in straitjackets in our worship services or wherever, but that we teach them and control the situation and deal with the situation. It doesn't bother me when I'm preaching to hear a baby cry, but it does bother me for the mother to let it scream through the entirety of my sermon. I was in a meeting one time, and it had to be the preacher's kid, of course, but he's the best screamer I ever heard. And I would have quit my sermon and extended the invitation, but I didn't think the audience could hear me. Sometimes it gets out of hand, and I say that to emphasize the point that we're talking about. Mothers do need to train their children, and as children get a little older, they ought to learn to sit and behave, to sit in a reasonable way and to behave. But that's that process of training. And no two are necessarily alike. Sometimes it takes a little longer with some. It takes a little different approach. But whatever it is, that responsibility is placed on us as parents. I think sometimes we may be more interested in helping the parents than we are in doing our own job. Judy says, I did this. I don't remember it, and I have a pretty good memory. But she says that when she got up to take three of ours out at the same time back a few years ago and the audience was all looking, that I stopped in the middle of the sermon and said, the rest of you look at me, she's capable of handling it. Honestly, I don't remember saying that, but I must have. In our case, our oldest child is only 4 years and 4 months older than our youngest, and we have four. And there were times when Judy had to take all four of them out, not many times, it didn't take long. She gets her point across real well. One woman wondered why her husband didn't come to church with her and help her with those four children. But anyway, she dealt with it. That was her responsibility. We as parents have that responsibility, and we can, in love and kindness and reason, train our children to act in the right way. Parents have a responsibility to discipline. If a child is a child and is not responsible for making all those decisions, parents must. And if God understands that a child does not think like an adult, then it stands to reason that parents have that responsibility to make some of those decisions and to see that those decisions are respected. That's what the Bible talks about is discipline. Chastisement is mentioned. And that idea is involved in that word nurture in Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Parents have a responsibility to discipline, and we must understand that. And understand the importance that dads and mothers play in bringing these that are younger through this state, through these different stages and through this process of maturing and growing up. And folks, it's going to take some time. Many times we don't take the time to spend with our little ones that we should. Even Jesus said, "Come unto me," as he was talking to the children. He said, "Suffer little children to come unto me. Let them come to me." I believe Jesus was saying there, let them spend some time with me. We dads especially need to sit down and get our priorities straight and spend more time with our children than we ever have, to be able to talk to them, to let them know how much we love them, to correct them when it is needed, and to develop that process of love and those ties that bind us in that relationship to where we can bring those who are children to where they can be men and women in the gospel, in the Lord's work, and in the communities where we live. Parents have such a responsibility because a child is a child. And God doesn't expect that child to act like an adult. Therefore, somebody else must accept the responsibility to take care of decisions that have to be made during the process that youngster is coming from childhood to adulthood. And that's where God placed parents. Thanks be to God for the help that's given in the church. We have so many things that are being done now that were not done years ago that provide opportunities for help and encouragement. And I'm thankful for everything that's done in our school system. And many of us that are adults today have been influenced for good by great school teachers who knew we were as a child and we needed some pointing in the right direction. But when all is said and done, it has to come right back to that responsibility where God has placed it, with dads and mothers who love their children and train them in the way they should go and help them to be able to come to adulthood. When I was a child, I spake as a child, understood as a child, and I thought as a child. But you know, there's another sense in which we need to look at this word child this morning, and that's being a child in another family. A child of God. And in the same sense that the Bible pictures, as we've just described, that a child is a child in the beginning of his life, it also pictures that in the spiritual sense. Born again, John 3, as newborn babes, 1 Peter 2:2, desire the sincere milk of the word, walking in newness of life after baptism, Romans 6. When you and I begin our walk as a child of God, in somewhat the same sense, we are as children. We may speak, understand, and think like a child, spiritually speaking. But there is to be that growth to where we grow up as Christians and we mature. If a child makes a mistake, we don't throw him out. We help him to correct that mistake and to grow. And when a child of God makes a mistake, we need to help that child of God correct that mistake and receive forgiveness for it and to grow. That's one of the reasons that we extend an invitation, as we shall in just a moment, to encourage people to become children of God and to grow as children, and realizing that when they make mistakes, they can come home. If you're not a child of God this morning, you need to become one. And start your life for him as a child in his kingdom. If you are a child of God who should have grown up somewhat and you have not, and you've been acting childish, spiritually speaking, you may need to come back in repentance this morning and ask for forgiveness. It is very important for us to understand the worth of a child in the physical family, and for that child to be in the right set of circumstances. And it is also important for us to understand the worth of a child in the spiritual family, and that child in the right set of circumstances. If you are not a faithful child of God in his family. We encourage you to come as together we stand and sing.